For Autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, you are listening to the Tank Slappers Podcast. And on this week's show, we're going to be looking back over the Qatar Grand Prix, the 2024 season opener. I am your host, Lewis Duncan, and joining me, as ever, is Oriol Puigdemont, who was in Qatar for what was a really interesting first round of the season. We're obviously a couple of days after the race, so and there's still really just two names that are dominating the headlines. That's Pedro Acosta and Marc Marquez. And you have to say, as far as first sort of weekends go of the season for both of them, it was pretty damn interesting. There's a lot of excitement, I think, to be had for the season ahead. Let's start, Yuri, with Marc. I mean, it was the story of last year. It was the story of the winter. We finally got him on, you know, seeing him in a race situation. And qualifying, sprint race, Grand Prix, it was all really encouraging. You know, sixth on the grid, you know, fifth in the sprint, fourth in the Grand Prix, fighting for a podium. You know, this the old Marc looks like he's very much kind of almost back.
Yeah. We need to put the things in perspective here. And for many people, might look like fourth place is not it's not matching the expectations from a rider and from Marc after joining Ducati. But don't forget that it's Qatar. He's only won once in Qatar. He's a right-hander racetrack, so it's not his favorite kind of layout. And I think it was his first. It's obvious that being his first ever race in a Ducati, he had a lot to learn, some kind of things that you can only learn on a race. And fourth place, I think I probably agree that I was expecting, let's say, a bit more, but I think fourth place is a really good debut for him, and especially at the moment. We are in a moment, or he is in a moment, where he's still building up his, let's say, chances. So I think we're definitely gonna see much more from him in the next coming races, especially in Austin in a month time.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was always kind of unfair to expect Marc to, you know, to just come to Qatar and win the Grand Prix, you know, first time on a Ducati. It's not very often we see a rider switch a manufacturer and win on it straight away. Anyway. And yeah, you're absolutely right. Qatar has never been a great circuit for him. He actually described it during the race weekend. You know, when he was on the Honda, it used to be one of the nightmare sort of weekends for him. And on the Ducati, it wasn't as bad. You have to kind of, if you look at sort of the breakdown, I mean, I did a whole two pages of notes about Marc's race, looking at the average lap times. And he wasn't that far away. He was 600ths outside of Martin's average lap times. He was just over a tenth and a half behind Bagnaia, who dominated that Grand Prix. It's really, we cannot emphasize enough how good that is. You know, it's very, very close for a first race. And I think it split people in half. Some people are a bit disappointed. They expected more, but I think other people are now, there's that other half that are really, really convinced now that Marc will be a big, big threat this year. Where do you kind of stand on that?
Well, I think disappointed is too hard. It's too hard. I wouldn't say I'm 100% not disappointed about that, but I can understand that when you are talking about Marc, you always expect, the excellence. So, but don't forget that he's still learning the strong points from the Ducati. Don't forget that his team is still learning how he wants the bike, and I think it was pretty obvious, especially on Sander's race, that there was something not 100% on the bike setup, especially going out of the last corner. He was losing a lot of ground in compared with Brad Binder and both Ducatis from Martin and Pecco. So he told us that they made a final modification on the bike, and it wasn't probably, it didn't go on the right direction after what we have all seen on the race. So yeah, I think he's still in a learning process, and we are not gonna see the best of this Mark and Ducati's package until, I would give them 2 more races. Let's see Austin, because Austin is his place, and after that we can sit down and talk again.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, on that sort of setup change they made, do you think maybe they kind of approached the weekend just quite conservatively, maybe just, you know, putting a set, you know, an engine map on the bike, just making sure that the tire would last, he wasn't going to burn it out. Obviously he's used to pushing in a certain way on a bike, which is generally shredded the tires last year, because the Honda, the only way to get any kind of form out of the Honda was to push it like, you know, like your life depended on it. Do you think maybe there was just a bit more, you know, they kind of played it safe on that Grand Prix?
Yeah, probably. I mean, don't forget that Qatar, the level of degradation of the tires is huge. It's one of the most demanding tracks of the calendar. So I may think that they played a bit conservative on that regard. So that's why I think that all the ingredients together probably don't allow us to see the reality of what we're gonna see from Mark and the Ducati in the early future.
Yeah, 100% agree. I mean, like you say, if you kind of look at the breakdown of his weekend, really, he's very close. And I think what kind of stood out to me the most, and this might sound kind of silly when you consider how bad the Honda was last year, but the step forward that, you know, that like the step forward in performance of Mark on the Ducati is, it really does prove that the bike was the problem last year. It was nothing to do with him, nothing to do with the injuries. And you can kind of, you see that a little bit in the, if you kind of compare Luca Marini's 2023 Qatar and his Qatar weekend just gone. Yes, okay, we'll throw in a few caveats. Different time of the year, there was a test this year. Yeah, I know. But you look at his qualifying lap time, it was over a second slower than the qualifying lap time he managed last year that put him on pole position, and that lap put him almost last on the grid. You could kind of, I think that helps to really put into perspective how far off Honda really are and were with Mark on the bike even last year.
Yeah, I mean, I think the precision test in Qatar and also the first race, it was like, how do you call it, reality. We call it in Spanish, a reality punch.
A reality check.
A reality check for Luca. So, yeah. Of course, he had a problem. He had a problem on the race. He told us, he didn't specify which kind of problem, but something happened with that bike because he was so far away. I mean, don't forget that Miller had a crash, and even with that crash, he was able to overtake Marini during the race. So there was something that was definitely something wrong with that Honda. He was super far from all the other Honda riders. But yeah, I mean, and there's also HRC, when everybody was packing after the race, they were I mean, Lucas Bike was turned on. The engine was revving on the pit lane. So Honda wanted to double check something on the bike. That's what got me thinking that something was not properly right on that bike. But still, I mean, putting this problem aside, I mean, Honda is working. Don't get me wrong. They are working super hard and doing the things completely different than last year. Last year, I've spoken with HRC engineers in Qatar, and they assure me that the situation has changed 100% from night to day. But they still don't have the key to turn the things around on that bike. They are getting closer, and my point of view is that Honda maybe is in a bit better position than Yamaha at the moment, because you see some steps from them. From Yamaha, it's difficult to see those steps.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, Fabio Quartararo said that the Yamaha he's on now is further away than it's ever been, which is, you know, it's maybe a bit too early to say, but already it kind of seems to me like that Fabio doesn't see much of a future with Yamaha beyond this year. If you know, the bike clearly hasn't gone any further forward, and it only just kind of, you know, it was there or thereabouts. It only just beat the Hondas, but like with the that was one Yamaha. Obviously, Rins struggled a lot. You know, it's I think the scale of the problem that both Yamaha and Honda face is a lot bigger than maybe we realized kind of coming into the winter.
Yeah. But I mean, they don't have any other chance than keep working and try to do the things right. I mean, don't forget that they are both super big manufacturers, and that if they do what it needs, they will come back probably much faster than other smaller manufacturers. But they need to do the right things. They need to change the dynamics, the working dynamics. So and you know that with Japanese, with all their philosophy in terms of security margins, that all they take, it's harder. So let's see how long it takes and how much pressure they are able to handle, because as you mentioned, Fabio is putting a lot of pressure on Yamaha, but on the other hand, it's difficult for me to see a way out from him. It's difficult to see Fabio signing for who would sign him. I mean, don't forget that Fabio's cachet is quite high. So I don't see the Piaggio group being able to afford this kind of contract. And I don't see, probably Honda would knock his door. But would you leave at this stage Yamaha for joining Honda? I don't see a huge difference between them at the moment.
Yeah, it's an interesting point you make, actually, because it almost feels like the only way out for Fabio is that he accepts that he has to take a huge pay cut. I mean, much in the same that, you know, Mark has done, but the options for Fabio are much less. KTM is fully booked. You know, they have their riders, they have their philosophy. Ducati, I can't see very much changing within that sort of stable, really. They seem quite happy with the riders. The only question mark right now is maybe Martin, you know, what happens there, and Bastianini as well, I guess. But you know, their options are for you to write, the options for Fabio are slender, and it will probably require him accepting a big paycheck. And I guess that'll be a true test of how hungry he is to win a MotoGP. If he's not willing to accept that kind of big cut, then
well, we still need to give him. I mean, I would still give him a bit more time, and not to him, but also to Yamaha, to see if there's any. If we can anticipate any kind of reaction, even a small reaction. But otherwise, I mean, he will be in a very difficult position because he has put and he has said some quite direct comments to Yamaha in the last months, so he will have to take a decision. But this decision may imply leaving Yamaha and accepting, probably, as you say, a really important pay cut, or staying and trying to. Yeah, I think it will be difficult for him to justify staying in the team after what. That he did that once 2 years ago when he signed the renewal. He said exactly that. No, I'm staying because I know that there's a project, there's some changes, and I'm convinced. So at this stage, I think it will be difficult for him to repeat that story. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, 100%. Just a few sort of places ahead of them, the other big story of that Qatar Grand Prix was obviously Pedro Acosta. And you know, we knew he was going to be good. You know, this is, you know, let's not make any bones about it. This is a generational talent. This is a long, long time since we've seen a rider as good as Pedro come into the Premier class. And he obviously a lot of lessons still to learn. But that was a fantastic Grand Prix, you know, fighting for the podium at one stage, overtaking Marc Marquez, which seemed like a real sort of, you know, present future sort of kind of situation. I mean, finished ninth in the end, which wasn't very surprising given how much he chewed up his tires. But I mean, you know, Pedro Acosta is a real deal.
100%. I would say that finishing ninth is not probably their reality of how good he is and how good he was. And I would say that the impact of his debut was quite similar, or would have been quite similar, to Mark's debut. Without these problems, he said that it was lack of experience problems, but there was also a major factor on Pedro going slower on the last part of the race, which was physical. I mean, he had some arm, let's say, I wouldn't say problems, and I'm not talking deliberately about arm pump, but it was obvious he was doing some movements on the bike, and it was obvious he didn't want to specifically refer to that after the race, but it was it had a big impact on the result. Although otherwise he would have been ready, and I would go a bit further. His tires would have been ready for attacking.
Yeah,
the last part of the race.
100%. I mean, this is one kind of quite big thing. I guess it's we don't always consider about a rookie stepping up to MotoGP, is it? In Moto2, they don't have these, you know, ride height devices, all the different controls and the handlebars. And I think Pedro found that actually trying to activate some of them was awkward. It was an awkward sort of movement. But that's a lesson he now knows. He now knows where he needs to, you know, strengthen himself up a little bit. And these are all the lessons that come with being a rookie. And, you know, if you kind of compare his debut with Marquez's debut, and to take nothing away from Mark back in 2013, the landscape of MotoGP is completely different. You know, the competitive landscape is much, much closer. And you know, back then you were Honda and Yamaha, factory Honda and Yamaha. That was the quickest bikes. You know, if you were on one of those and you were riding well, good results.
I think at that race in Qatar 2013, the first non-Japanese bike was Dobby's bike, who finished seventh. And I think, if I'm not wrong, it was 24 seconds slower. His race was 24 seconds slower than Jorge de Lorenzo's Yamaha, who won the race. So, as you said, the landscape has changed completely, dramatically. So, I think the best, I would say that the most exciting news about Pedro is how he raced on Sunday. I mean, the way he was enjoying more, even more than in Moto2. He was able to brake, to slide, to move the bike, make the bike stop wherever he wanted to stop. And I've always thought that the KTM was a difficult bike to, I mean, don't get me wrong, all the bikes are difficult to ride, but especially the KTM was a tricky one. And on his hands, you looked at, he's able to enjoy. He's able to, to smile. So, I think Pedro's going to bring us some really, really, really exciting moments.
Yeah, he has told Germany to break Mark's record of being the youngest ever Grand Prix winner, which honestly, I think is a bit more of a realistic thing now, having seen that first Grand Prix. I was a bit, before the race, thinking, you know, it's a tall order given how competitive MotoGP is now, but after that Grand Prix, I'm more convinced it can happen.
Yeah. My only doubt is how his arms will be in the next coming races. So Portimao is a roller coaster. So let's see how it goes there. This rear device switch was in a different position in the race than in the test. He mentioned that. He said that the team will probably modify a bit the lever, so it will be more reachable given his hands, the dimension of his hands. So maybe it helps and it makes this, let's say, problem disappears. I really hope this happens, because it will be good to see Pedro in all his capacities in Portimao.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, 11 and a half seconds off Pecco in the Grand Prix. You know, I think Pedro's gone about it quite well. You know, he's always said that if he has a good race in Qatar, it wouldn't necessarily be a real result, because obviously there's the test there. He needs to go to a new circuit now and kind of discover things there. And I think that's really the true kind of genius of Pedro Acosta, is that he is, despite the fact that he's 19, he's in MotoGP, he's really, really grounded. He's really, you know, he looks at the big picture. He's not getting ahead of himself. He's not, oh, I'm here, I'm a superstar, I'm a MotoGP rider. He knows that he's got a big, big job ahead of him.
Yeah, I think he's learned the lesson from Moto3. The step from Moto3 to Moto2 was a reality shock for him. He definitely has learned the lesson, not because I say that, but because he admits that he was not ready for this boom in terms of being on the headlines, having everybody talking about him. So it was brand new to him. So, and it had a negative impact on him. He was not ready, but now he has learned. And he understands that it's just noise. From his perspective, it's just noise. So, and he repeats the same sentence. He says, it's just noise. It depends on you, whether you pay attention to that or you dismiss it. So I think, as you say, he's really grounded, and yeah, is the kind of behavior that you expect from a guy like him, that he is one of a kind in, I think, in the field. He has demonstrated that in the last, let's say, couple of years.
And he's funny. Like, he's funny. You listen to him speak to the media. He's you know, he enjoys what he does. You know, he's...
I would say that he's funny, 100%, but even more important, he's natural.
Yeah. He's not... Yeah, it's not forcing it. It's not like he's not like Daniel Ricciardo in F1, where it's a bit, you know, it's a bit put on. It's a bit, you know, he... forcing himself to be funny. Pedro is
funny. I also like Daniel very much, to be honest.
I don't very much, but that's just me. But I like, I remember I was at the FIM Awards in Liverpool last year and did an interview with Pedro, and between that he was watching clips of, you know, Irish road racing. You know, he's watching a clip of Michael Dunlop win a race in Ireland and then jump off the bike and go grab a pint. And you could just see his eyes light up. You could just see that if he could get away with that in MotoGP, he would try it. And I think MotoGP needs that. There's two, you know, you need a guy that's funny, that can speak to the media, that can speak to the fans, that can embrace this whole thing. You know, doesn't see himself as a superstar. You know, you kind of speak to some riders and media debriefs and they try and speed things up, and they don't give very good answers, and they're, you know, they want to be there the shortest time as possible. You get the kind of the impression from Pedro that he likes, he's happy to speak to the media, he's happy to do all these things, he's happy to promote MotoGP.
100%. He's enjoying the moment, and especially because he's enjoying he's enjoying on the bike, because that's what makes the difference. If you are enjoying, if a rider is enjoying on the bike, all the rest comes much more, more naturally. Otherwise, if he's struggling, it will be difficult for him to handle the whole situation, not only on track but also off track.
Yeah, 100%. Yuri, I think we'll wrap it up there, and we'll reconvene after. We'll reconvene next week, actually, for the preview of the Portuguese Grand Prix, which will be another interesting sort of test for both Marc Marquez and Pedro Acosta. This has, of course, been the Tank Cyprus podcast for Autosport and autosport.com. Please go and check out autosport.com and motorsport.com for all of your MotoGP news from Qatar and on the build-up to Portugal. Lots of features for you. Yuri's been doing some great work on the ground, as always, getting exclusive interviews and stuff for you to read. So please go and check all of that out. You're more than welcome, my friend. And like I say, we will be back next week to preview the Portuguese Grand Prix from Portimão. So until then, it is a very warm goodbye.